When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome sales event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome sales event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning. Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Trillville Thursday. Thank you so much for being with us. Randy Mack out for the remainder of the week. We will see him. The next time we hear from Randy will be Monday morning in Vegas after Randy and I spend Sunday together in Vegas. So next time we hear from Randy, it'll be fun and interesting. The next couple of days, Abe's going to fill in for him, which we're looking forward to. We got a ton to get to over the next 3 hours. Abe, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Bunk, good. Man. It was a fun night last night. Mm-hmm. I got first place in trivia.
Oh, good.
Start
congrats.
There.
Congrats.
But also watching the Hawks at trivia and drove home at halftime and watched the second half. I don't know. Like, it actually worked. Mm-hmm. Like, the NBA Cup actually worked. And maybe not over everyone.
Yeah.
But, like, the six teams that advanced or eight teams that advanced, I feel like it worked. And I can't speak for, like, maybe Magic fans weren't in it. Mm-hmm. The other day when they lost to the Bucks, but like I was into the game last night.
Well, it was a good game. It was. I think the biggest difference for us, and it's okay to say this is fine, whatever. They're winning this year. I mean, last year they didn't play well in it. They were out, and that was that. And it was like, oh, that kind of sucked. But like when they're playing well and taking it seriously, and to me that's the thing that like that's all you're asking for, right? And it feels like a bare minimum to ask for. But there was clearly. And I don't want to, it's not a playoff level intensity. And they said on the broadcast last night, they're like, look, this isn't the NBA finals, this isn't the NBA playoffs even, but it's different than a regular season December basketball game.
It may not feel that way to the crowd at MSG or even to the players. For me as a viewer, though, yesterday, it did feel like game one of the finals. And obviously Saturday will feel like another game one of the finals. And then if they advance, that would theoretically feel like game seven of the, like it really did feel to me like way more significant.
Just
in terms of my investment, sure, not sure. Necessarily the atmosphere or how tough guys were or how it was being officiated, none of that.
And look, everybody sort of has their own barometer for how you judge that kind of stuff. I can't go that far with how I felt about it, but it definitely felt like more than a regular season game. And it felt like sort of the rekindling of something that had died off over the last couple of years, which is Trae Young and the Hawks going into Madison Square Garden and owning it.
Like, they have killed the Hawks at MSG. Or excuse me, they have killed the Knicks at MSG like for a while now.
Yeah.
I think they've won like 5 of 7 in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and I don't know what that was, but that I bet it was. What was that?
Take y'all blank home.
Oh, got it. Okay, that was Trae. Yeah, and then you know, for him to at the end of the game stand at half court and roll a little dice on them because they're headed to Vegas.
Did you see the story behind
and
that?
Celebrate. He said him and his brother came up with it
like right? a couple days ago. So it's been on his mind for like a couple days.
Which, again, and whatever. Like, be the guy you want to be, change, don't change, whatever. But, like, this nonsense that he's been peddling publicly about not wanting to be a villain and then not really being his personality is such BS. Like, he's so good at it That was when he was at his best in the playoffs a couple of years ago. When he was doing that to them and owning them and bowing at half court and all that stuff. And they're chanting and they were after him yesterday. But you don't roll dice at half court at Madison Square Garden at the end of the game if you don't want to be hated by New York Knicks fans, which you should want to do.
You should
go in there and do that to him. And the way, especially the way he played in the second half, like the adjustments that they made it at halftime to attack the way that they were defending Trey, get him off the ball, get everybody else involved, and then the way that they defended, that third quarter was it. Like, they went on like a 24-4 run in the third quarter and ended that basketball game.
The game changed. They outscored the Knicks 34-18 in the third quarter. And here's what I enjoy the most, Bunk, about like this Trey villain thing, where hate him or not, like whatever, the fans are focusing on him. The opposing team, to an extent, focuses on him. In the meantime, the guys killing you are Jalen and DeAndre Hunter. So you do what you can to take Trey out of the game. I mean, last night was not one of his greatest performances in Madison Square Garden. It wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. It was 22-5-11. That's good.
Yeah.
You're not winning the game because Trey goes 22-5-11.
Well, I think over the course of the game, sure. But I think he also... It took him about 15, 20 minutes to kind of diagnose how they were defending him. I think his first assist came with 4 minutes left in the first half. And then in the final, whatever, 25 minutes of the game, he had 11 assists.
I just mean the focus is on him. Meanwhile, these other guys are killing you.
Understood. And that sort of gets back to something we've talked about with the Hawks for years, which is if they're going to ascend to that next level of really being a contender in the Eastern Conference, Trae Young needs to be the second best player on the team. Right now, and Jalen Johnson, they did a good job against Jalen Johnson the first half yesterday, too. And then he sort of took what was available to him. He was able to really dominate on the glass, and he played some great defense. And then he found his offense in the fourth quarter and sort of found his flow. But DeAndre Hunter, right now, is probably the most effective guy in the NBA at the role that he's being asked to play, which is sixth man. Like
leading scorer off the bench in the entire league.
It's not often that a guy like him, who only plays one place, goes through the transformation that it feels like he's gone through from, all right, he was supposed to be this guy, whatever. I'm so over the expectations and getting focused on what he isn't. Like, he's adapted to and accepted this new role of coming off the bench and
prefers it.
Has to.
He's gone on record and said he prefers it.
Has to. And to be doing what he's doing is crazy. Like, he was such a disappointment until last year when they figured out this is what he needed to be doing. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is like a genuinely important tool to a team that might be pretty good.
How many people tried to run him off? Myself included at times.
It wasn't unjustified.
No,
he wasn't playing well. Like, he was, like, as a starter in the role that they were trying to use him in.
Based on the expectations of when he was drafted, that's part of it, too.
Throw that out the window.
Yeah.
He was an ineffective player
in
the way that they were trying to use him. He was. He was an ineffective starting player as an Atlanta Hawk for the majority of his time here. Injuries were a part of it. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
Injuries were absolutely a part of it. And, you know, they stuck with him, and they found a better role for him, and now he's thriving, and it's vital because you get 24 points off the bench from that guy. Hawks are getting more points, more bench production than any other team in the Eastern Conference with him and Bogey and Okongwu and all that stuff.
Like, yeah. Shot 4 or 5 from three last night.
It's crazy.
When Bogey's shooting was a little bit off, DeAndre Hunter picked it up. I want to go back to a show you and I did together, like, 2.5 or 3 months ago, and I said something about this Hawks team, and you looked at me like, whoa, pump the brakes a little bit. And you might still be on that line. Do you know where I'm headed yet?
No.
I said
but
that
I'm a brake pumper, though, sometimes.
Sure. I said that I think Jalen Johnson could be, like, one of the top 20 or 25 players in this league.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, you know, I want to see it. I want to do this. I'm not saying he's there yet. He's not. But I still see that in him. I still think that when we talk about what he does, what Trey does, what they do together, what they can do with multiple different teammates on the floor, too. It doesn't really change whether it's Bogey or Capella or whoever else. Jalen Johnson, to me, is that dude.
I agree.
And he's not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'll be there by the end of this year or not. He's an all-star, and I think he's one of the top 25 players in the league.
He's got an opportunity to be an all-star this year for sure.
Yeah.
The way that he's playing, he's taken that next step from where he was last year. One of the biggest keys.
After a relatively slow start this year, too.
Yeah. Knock on wood, he can stay healthy because that was, you know, that's something that kind of slowed his progress last season. The thing that's so fun about watching him this year in seeing him take that step is he's pretty patient. Like, for a guy who is as talented as he is and is clearly one of the two, you know, big dogs on this team that's expected to go out there and help you win every single night, like, they put OG Anunoby on him last night in the first half, and OG did a nice job, and he wasn't really a huge part of what they were doing offensively in the half court, but he didn't force it, let it come to him. They had kind of a grimy first half performance. They were down three at halftime or something like that. Like, nothing really got going flow-wise in the first half. And then they made some adjustments in the second half. They started allowing him to bring the ball up
yeah.
and set the offense up, which is such an incredible thing to have in a 6'8 forward like he is to be able to set the offense up. But, yeah, no, the growth that he's made this year is impressive.
The final thing I want to say about this team is when you look at some of the stars on this team, and we'll include DeAndre Hunter, but certainly Trae Young and Jaylen, no one feels like they have to beat you by scoring. They're all comfortable beating you in a multitude of ways. That gives you so many leniencies to have off nights on given nights or to set up. I don't know. It just completes and well rounds this team.
It's got to be weird for Tom Thibodeau and like Knicks fans to have such a soft team. They're soft. They're little. They get bullied. Like the Hawks.
What did I get that one guy?
They beat him up on the glass. What, the Carl Anthony gonna commit the worst fouls in the NBA at all times? Towns. Like, the game is a close game. He's just fouling guys out of frustration. That's why you can't trust him. They can't trust him. Carl Anthony Towns is just going to foul his way out of games. That's what he does.
And Jalen Brunson's a great player, but he didn't have answers last night.
Nah. They got some guys. They got some guys. They're nothing special. Hawks proved it last night. Way to go. Way to go into Madison Square Garden and take it to them. 108-100. They advance. They're going to Vegas, just like me and Randy. Now, they'll be there before us, so they can get it warm for us. We'll see them out there. All right. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's trending. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Let you hear a couple of the highlights from last night. Get to some of the other big stories as well. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now out to Trae. Trae Young down the lane. Alley-oop. Clint Capella jams it home again. It's just about time to put the Knicks to sleep, folks. 108 to go in the game.
I played that one with my little brother a few days ago. We had talked about that, and I knew what I was going to do. We're going to Vegas, so that's what I had to do.
There you go. That's Trae Young after the game. Highlight in the game of him throwing a lob to Capella late, just putting the final nails in the Knicks' coffin last night as the Hawks beat him 108-100. kind of a tale of two halves. Both teams played pretty sloppy in the first half. Wasn't a lot of flow to the game. And the Hawks came out in the second half with just a great effort on defense. A much better. They had a pretty good adjustment to what the Knicks were doing defensively. Got the ball out of Trey's hands a little bit. And then he really started penetrating into the heart of the defense and hitting guys with lobs. And it was nice to see. That's been fun to see in this team this year, too, is like the ability to adjust in-game, halftime, whatever, and adapt to whatever the opposing defense is throwing at them. But it is such a treat to be able to watch, and Trey's doing a nice job too, but be able to watch Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, Zachary Risacher, be able to go out there and just lock these guys down on the perimeter. It's crazy. Like, Dyson Daniels gets his hands on everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's going to lead the league in deflections, potentially steals, you would imagine, as well. The interesting thing to me, and you talked about that first half, like, I'm sitting there watching the game, I'm like, this is manageable? They're still in it. I think it was really important in that first half to not fall out of the game. I think in previous years, we've seen a Hawks team that's just non-competitive early to the point where they can't climb their way back. They were down 9 in this game. It may have been 10 at one point. And it just still felt comfortable. It still felt manageable in that second quarter. They had a little spurt at the end of the quarter to get it a little bit tighter, and then they came out and turned the game completely around in the third quarter. I thought it was important to keep it competitive in the first half when you didn't have your best.
Yeah, the first half was gross. Like, we've seen
Hawks teams in recent years not keep it close when they play like that.
They're down. What are they? They go into halftime down 3. Is that what it was?
I can't remember because they put the time back on the clock and sent them back to the line, and it got wonky.
Actually, it might have been down a little bit more than that at halftime. But anyway, the point is to make the adjustments that they make and come out in the second half defensively and be able to take it to them the way that they did was I'm obsessed with it. Hang on a second. Scrolling. Oh, shoot. They were down 7 at halftime.
Well, okay. I think because it was like 5, and then they had to
Carl Anthony Towns had to come out and get those free throws and all
4/10 of a second.
Yeah. And then Trey there talking post-game about the celebration. It's one of it's going to get a lot of run on TV today. A lot of conversation as well, which is great. I mean, they're going to Vegas. Why not shoot a little dice at halftime? Or, sorry, at half court.
Did you see Jalen Brunson's response?
I didn't.
He was, I think this is a pretty mature response, but we should win the game if we don't want him to do that.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Don't take it as disrespect. And this goes back into the crowd, the flag planting thing a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, win the game. You don't have to worry about it.
When he was doing it, because I didn't know what he was doing at first. Like, you couldn't really tell what he was doing. I was like, what's he, is he like?
I thought he was brushing his shoe off or something.
Is he like pretending to plant a flag at half court? Like, what's he doing? And then they had the reverse angle of it. It was like, oh, okay.
That would actually be a hilarious celebration too. Like, fake planting a flag into wood.
Into wood, yeah. That's even worse than AstroTurf. It's literally impossible to do. I'm sure Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart will have some breakdown of it on their little podcast as the week goes on. But that's fine. They're going to have a little extra time on their hands. They don't have to go to Vegas. They're not in the NBA Cup anymore. They're home. I did kind of like their court, though. Like, of all the NBA Cup courts, because then the game after that was the Rockets-Warriors game, and that court was hard to watch or hard to look at. The Knicks one wasn't so bad. It's like a warm orange. Kind of looked like a basketball court, almost.
I just feel like there's, like, spend some time on the design as opposed to just color splash the whole thing. I don't know. There's got to be a better way to do it.
I just, the ones that are louder are harder to look at.
Yeah.
And that one wasn't as loud. So
that's,
I appreciate
fair.
And the Hawks is like a softer yellow, which almost looked like wood, which I really liked. That one was actually good. The worst one was the Celtics one. This is like, it's just green.
Too much color.
It's just so much color.
It makes me want to be colorblind. Only give me certain cones in my eyes, please.
Take away take
rods
away
and cones.
Color.
I don't need them.
All right, congratulations to Jalen Walker. He's the Butkus Award winner. Here he is winning that award.
All-out blitz, yours, cannot escape. They've got him again. Jalen Walker for a second time against this final minute. Pressure comes. Manning escapes on the run, trying to make something happen. Cannot get away from Jalen Walker.
Yeah, man. He wins the Butkus Award. He's the nation's top linebacker. Had a lot of good moments during the season, but he won that award based on destroying Texas twice.
He did not have the nation's best season from a linebacker. He might be the best linebacker in the country.
He might be. And he might have had the best performances of a linebacker in individual
but
games.
But I would almost say you look at the Georgia front, including him and Mikal Williams, who's going to go in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Yeah. These guys did not have the season you thought they could have.
From a consistency standpoint,
right.
No.
But from a dominant standpoint, there were moments.
When they needed it, yeah.
Unfortunately, or fortunately for him, those were the games that the most people watched. We saw the ratings of the SEC title game. Everyone watched, and he tore it up.
Yep. Becomes the third Georgia linebacker to win the award since 2017. Roquan Smith won it in 17. N'Kobe Dean won it in 21. So they were due.
What is Georgia? Were linebacker you there? They're tight end you?
Just NFL
are they,
first rounder you.
What else are we going to go with?
I don't
punter?
Know.
Punter you?
RBU. I don't
RBU
know.
Definitely was a thing.
It was for a while. Recently, it's kind of fallen off.
Yeah.
Recently, it's become tight end you. But now you're telling me linebacker you.
But I mean, just look at the different positions that have been drafted.
Safety and DB.
Safety.
Yeah, I know. I'm playing around. But
linemen,
yeah.
Interior, and pass rushers.
Offensive linemen, too.
Just kind of not QBU. Like, that's kind of just hasn't been quarterbacks drafted early. Not recently, but it hadn't mattered. They still won a ton of games. I don't know. It's just first-round draft pick you.
When was Stetson taken? Fourth round, fifth round?
Yeah, fourth round.
Carson Beck, maybe? Similar. Maybe you could be, like, fifth-round quarterback you.
That's crazy to say. Like, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year, I know this is ridiculous. We always say this, and it's not the way life works, but entertain it. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year, Carson Beck would have played his way out of the first 2 days of the draft, I would have said, well, clearly Georgia's season was a disaster.
It's not like you mocked him in the top 10. Everyone did.
Yeah.
He was one of the first 10 picks on every expert's board coming into the season.
He was.
And the Heisman favorite or second favorite at every Vegas sports book.
And now he's probably not going to play in the playoff due to injury. Still don't know officially. They know, but they're not telling us.
Yeah, we do.
They know, but they're not telling us. And I asked Randy this the other day. Now, Randy's always going to say this because he's going to, you know, he's been right about it, but he's going to pick Georgia when it comes time to pick Georgia. But he said his opinion of their ability to win a national championship didn't change based on whether Carson Beck plays quarterback or Gunnar Stockton plays quarterback. Now, I don't know if that's just a general homerism. I don't know if that's a Carson Beck indictment or if that's a Gunnar Stockton belief, but that's another crazy – that's a crazy one. Like, they win the national championship, Carson Beck doesn't play in the playoff. I mean
– Here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. I don't disagree with him.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
I think he's dead on. I think you're going to win this national championship if your receivers make some plays and stop dropping ball, if your defense plays at the level that they can play at, and if you don't make mistakes. And Carson Beck made enough mistakes that Gunnar Stockton making a mistake or two is no different.
But that's the thing. That we were talking about yesterday. It's like Carson Beck played so badly in some of these big games. Like, he hurt the team in some of these big games, and they still won them. Like, he's... Dude, three interceptions in the game against
the
Texas.
The only truly strong performance in a big game was Tennessee.
Yeah, that was a really good performance. And there were flashes of moments in some of the other games.
Yes.
But yeah, the way that he played against Tennessee was phenomenal. Anyway, all that to say, there's a lot of details of Georgia's season that if you only knew them, it would be hard to believe that they are where they are. But they are where they are.
By the way, with the path that they have, like on paper.
That might be the most impressive part of it, is that schedule. To play the way that they played at times and still navigate that schedule all the way to a bye in an SEC championship game, SEC championship, is nuts. So the big story of the day in sports, period, college football, while we're talking about it, we'll get back into it more in the noon hour.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick's the new head coach of
so many questions.
The North Carolina Tar Heels. What's the first one? Like, what's your first question? Because, like, I have a lot of questions about, a lot of thoughts about it, a lot of doubts, a lot of opinions.
The general thought process definitely is like close to top of the list, but I am more interested in how it's going to work.
Mm. Yeah.
Because
no idea.
I don't know how much he's going to be recruiting. I don't know how much. I think he's going to hire a wild staff, and I'm interested in that And he's certainly not going to be having sit-downs with kids about this stuff.
Well, they probably don't even want him to. Like, famously doesn't get along with young players. Famously doesn't have good relationships with young
players. How many NCAA rules is he going to break? Like, unknowingly, not on purpose, but like, just unknowingly.
Like what?
I don't know.
Can you even break NCAA rules anymore?
Comments in press conferences or practice regulations.
I don't know.
I just feel like he's going to do stuff he just doesn't know any better. I don't know.
Or maybe he does know better. He's got a bit of a history.
He
does. I mean?
That's a good point.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. Easier to cheat. I do scoff at the headline of the ESPN article that came out once the announcement was made. Sickened by the politics of the NFL, Belichick aims for a college. Yeah, right. Tried to get the Falcons job less than a year ago.
You didn't get any interviews right now.
Sickened by the politics. The politics of you not getting a job? All right, I guess. I don't know.
What are the
you also know where there's a lot of politics? College football.
I joked about this with you kind of just off air, but like if we continue expansion, there's a good chance that ACC realignment is not led by Florida State and Clemson. It's led by UNC.
Yeah.
And now he's the guy spearheading the future of this program.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating to me.
That is.
Are the expectations? I have so many questions.
The expectations win. Like, you don't pay $50 million 5 years for Bill Belichick.
My guy Nick Costo says they can win the ACC next year.
I heard that. There's nothing wrong with saying that. Who won the ACC this year?
I mean, Clemson?
Yeah. They were 9-3, right?
That's what Duke was.
Right.
By the way.
I mean, winning the ACC this year was doable. I mean,
yeah.
SMU comes in and gets the championship game, almost wins it. You know what I mean? Like, No offense to the conference, but like winning the ACC is a reasonable.
Here's the other thing. Like we've finally kind of like settled on like the greatest coach of all time. If he comes in and like wins at UNC, we're just going to have that shoved down our gullet for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and that's fine. Like that would be really impressive if he's able to do this at this age, go in there and actually win at a high level.
What if it's the other way?
Nothing. I mean,
I don't mean like 7-5, we get to a bowl. I mean, like,
then you just
4-8.
Then you just kind of like, oh, that was weird. Remember when Bill Belichick went and coached at UNC at the end? That was weird. You know? Like, I don't think there's anything he can do to hurt his coaching legacy. I know people always want to do that. The dude won a million Super Bowls. Like, I don't know. I think he's the best coach in NFL history, but
he's going to go into the Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe. He might be busy. He might have Might have Virginia Tech at home or something. You know what I mean?
They open their season against TCU.
Which is hilarious. Because do you know who the TCU head coach is? Sonny Dykes.
Right.
Since Sonny Dykes beat Michigan in that playoff game, which is a great moment, great game, he got boat raced by Georgia in the championship 65-7. He opened up next year against Dion and Colorado in the biggest media circus of all time. And now he gets to open this coming season against Bill Belichick in the biggest media circus of all time. Sonny Dykes sold his soul to the devil to beat Michigan that day, and he's paying for it. He's paying for it. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk some Falcons. The headline of the segment is, can the Falcons overcome Kirk Cousins? God, I hate that we even have to entertain. You're right. It's a reasonable question. We'll talk it out next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Trillville Thursday, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Get back into a little Falcons conversation in just a minute. 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle, college football corner. Back into that Bill Belichick conversation at 12:20 as I know everybody across the country is talking about that today. What a just a shocking, shocking story that Bill Belichick is going to continue his coaching career in college at UNC. And I don't know. I know Randy texted Algie Crumpler the other day. He's a UNC guy, and he was like, yeah, sure, bring him on. He's a great coach. Algie also played for him in the NFL, so he's got a good relationship with him. I wonder, like, if...
Yeah, sure, bring him on isn't, like, the most ringing endorsement.
That might not have... Like I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember exactly what he said. He was positive. It was a positive response to it. But, you know, he knows him and all that. I'm just put my mind like
the end of the day isn't worth the shot.
UNC, I guess.
Like who else are you going to hire?
That's the thing. That's the thing. With all due respect, you are North Carolina football.
Right.
Like you never won anything. The last ACC championship was in 1980. Like Lawrence Taylor was on that team. Like that's a long time ago. I think you've won double digit games one time in the millennium. So or in the century. Same thing. But. So it's not like he has taken over some storied program that may fall on its face in embarrassment if it doesn't work. Like 6-6 is pretty pretty much what you expect.
We were joking. Like, what was the alternative? Jamie Chadwell?
Right. Which, you know, I don't
like,
know. Right.
It's worth a shot. Right. It's worth a try.
Right.
You can always grab some hot up-and-coming mid-major coach if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, you can always try
if
it well.
If you're allowed to.
You might not be allowed to.
If you're allowed to, I don't know.
You might have a Belichick on the sideline for quite a while now if everything that we hear is
true. Is UNC private?
I don't think so.
So we like at some point we'll figure out the full details of their deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Because like the details of the Juan Soto deal have finally come out and like the security, like the MVP bonuses, that he gets a suite and premium home seats. It's all this stuff. Like, I want to know what the Belichick deal eventually is.
Do they don't have to report all of the details, do they? They just have to report all the financials.
Financials, yeah.
Okay. Hey, if you're looking for a place to watch the Falcons game on Monday and you're not coming to Vegas, it'd be awesome if you were, and maybe you are, and we'd love to see you out there. If you're not, then 92.9 The Game and Bud Light are hosting a Falcons and Raiders watch party on Monday, December 16th at 8:30 at $3 Cafe in McDonough. Watch the Falcons Monday night showdown between them and the Raiders with Abe. Abe's going to be there hosting it. Freddie Falcon as well, the cheer team. There's going to be some Falcons tickets, autographed items, a lot of fun, and specials on Bud Light. Must be 21 plus. Please drink responsibly.
So, I'm excited for this one. You've told me McDonough's a great area to watch this game.
$3 cafe. We did
not the game. I meant the viewing party. The game a little less so.
We did one there last year where I think the Falcons beat the Buccaneers. Desmond Ridder threw a couple bad picks. Hopefully
we get that on Monday night.
Hopefully Desmond Ridder throwing bad picks continues in the watch party. Now, it doesn't sound like he's guaranteed to play. Sounds like they really, really want Aiden O'Connell on one leg to play in this football game.
How bad? Because they haven't even seen him in game action.
They know.
Well, I guess they did the other day.
Yeah, he played.
Okay, did fumble once.
Yeah.
How bad must they think he is to, like, force this guy off of crutches into the game?
Yeah, but you put a couple things in there, words in there, like qualifiers that don't need to be in there. Okay. They don't think he's bad.
Okay.
They know it. We saw it.
We'll find out in game.
We watched. Remember? When he was the starting quarterback with no competition last year for the Atlanta Falcons, and then we watched it, and he couldn't do it. Over and over and over, and we had to be like, well, maybe he's learning. No,
they also have no arguments. Like, it's not like he stepped into better talent around him. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like,
No, it's a bad situation and a bad quarterback. And, obviously the story would be entertaining from our perspective if Desmond Ridder were to play in the game. No one else anywhere cares about that. So, I mean, it's not like some big national storyline if Desmond plays. But if he plays, it's entertaining for Falcons fans and certainly for us to talk about. It doesn't matter if Desmond Ridder plays or Aiden O'Connell plays. The Falcons need to win this game.
The team's got, what, two wins? Three wins?
They got two wins. They got nine losses.
It's not because Desmond Ridder has been quarterbacking them.
They've lost games with Gardner Minshew playing quarterback. They've lost games with Aiden O'Connell playing quarterback. They've lost games where Desmond Ridder has played. They're a bad football team.
They lost games when they had Devontae.
They're probably going to fire Antonio Pierce at the end of the season. I know I saw Davis was asked about it at the owners' meetings yesterday, and he didn't commit to anything. Said he was unhappy with the way it had gone and all that stuff, which he should be unhappy with the way that it's gone. They're really bad now. Maybe you shouldn't have hired a guy who didn't have any experience, who like got guys to get fired up over a couple wins late in the season. But you did, so you sleep in the bed you made. The question for Falcons fans is, can Kirk Cousins snap out of this? Can he have a performance that can at least lead you to have a little bit of confidence about his ability to close this season out, get the Falcons in the playoffs, and maybe do something there? That's what we need to see on Monday night.
So, but here's the question, though. Like, for him to snap out of this, as you put it, and I think that's what we are all looking for, they have to determine why he's fallen into this. And I'm not convinced that they know why. That's the biggest concern for me.
I don't think they do. I don't think
it doesn't just happen. Something has got to be triggering the issues.
What do you think it is?
Honestly,
at the end of the show yesterday, me and Randy kind of got there, and I'll rehash some of the stuff that I said in a couple minutes. But because he was playing pretty good football, solid football early, not great, and then kind of stepped into a really good run of play between that first Tampa game and the Cowboys.
And that's
game.
Why it's so confusing.
Yeah. And then the last 4 weeks, it's just been like a huge drop off. Now, here's the thing though. Like some of the details, obviously zero touchdowns, eight interceptions, fumbles, no wins, all that stuff. That's the most important stuff. Still a lot of completions in there. There's still a lot of yards in there.
They moved the ball.
They're still moving the ball a lot. Like there's still it's not just that he's out there.
They haven't been completely
inept
on offense.
An utter inept bum.
Right.
He's out there just making a lot more mistakes and paying for those mistakes more than he was earlier in the season. But there's still those glimmers of like, oh, that was a good throw. Oh, that was a good play. Oh, that worked. I'm not sitting here trying to defend the play.
No, but that makes it so much more tougher to diagnose.
I think it does.
I'll tell you what, and I may be speaking completely out of turn here. I think it comes down to trust.
Hmm.
I think he certainly lost trust in Kyle Pitts. We understand that. I don't think he trusts the offensive line. I think we've seen some of these interceptions where he has a clean pocket and doesn't know it, where he double pumps because he's worried that on the first attempt his arm's going to get hit, stuff like that. I think he might have lost trust in Zach Robinson as a play caller. I think he's lost trust in receivers getting open. I think he may have lost trust in himself, in his decision-making, in his arm, in his footwork. Like I think on all fronts there just may be a complete breakdown of trust. Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Unless we want to sit here and say that he is injured. And he is still limited by that.
I don't think he's injured.
Okay, so check that one off.
Well, but it's not that, though. Like, I think the fact that he got injured last year and had to rehab from it and try to bounce back and play coming off of it is part of it. And again, it's not an excuse.
Right.
I just think maybe it's trust. I don't know. I don't know how you go from that being a thing early in the season to then there being trust, and then now we're to this point where we don't trust again.
Like, if it's not physical.
I think it is physical. I think it is physical. I don't think I don't think it's an injury. I think it's an age thing. I think, because here's what I know about, and again.
How does that explain what happened the first 9 games when you're 6-3?
I know. I don't know. I'm not sure. All I know is watching this guy play, and again, this is my eye test, my opinion. I'm not some sort of doctor or whatever, but like Kirk Cousins' success, his entire career, has always been based on like a lot of really thin marginal things coming together at the in good timing in order for him to overcome some of the physical limitations that he has. He's never been some great athlete. He's never had a great arm. He's never been fast or whatever. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's always been like preparation and hard work and timing and trust like you're talking about and all these things that had to come together in order to simultaneously make up for what he lacked physically. I just think over time, it doesn't happen overnight. Like you don't just wake up one day and all of a sudden you can't do it anymore. It just gradually over the course of a season of getting hit and getting sacked and can't recover every week the way that you recovered the week before. As time goes on, this sort of erodes away at you slowly. And at some point it happens to everybody. And again, he still has the ability. 23 completions against New Orleans, 18 against Denver, 24 against the Chargers, and 23 against Minnesota. He still, on a play-in, play-out basis, has the ability to get it done. I just think that margin for error that was already incredibly slim has gotten so much slimmer that when he makes a throw that's close, when he makes a throw that's interceptable,
right,
or needs to be in a tight window, or the timing has to be perfect, I just think that tiny little sliver of margin has shrunk so much to where now they're coming up with interceptions.
You guys joked about something at the end of the show yesterday, which I don't think is a joke, and I think there's a realistic aspect of it. You talked about every throw, Kirk is gritting his teeth, and it looks this and that. You know what? And by the way, I've noticed this for a couple of weeks now, and I didn't notice it at the start of the season. He looks like an actor in a football movie that isn't a quarterback making a throw. And I say that because they just don't look right. Even the completions, they don't look right. It doesn't come out. His motion looks off. And I'm not trying to break down and say there is something physical. All I'm seeing is that, boy, that throw looked like it's a lot tougher than it should have been for him. And look, I have to post articles, right? And I have to go on USA Today images. And I search Kirk Cousins. And half of these are action shots. And you see him throwing. In every single one of them, pearly whites.
Yeah, but that's not new. He's always done
it. Maybe it is. And maybe I haven't watched enough.
But again, that gets back to what we're talking about. Like, in order for it to even have ever happened, it's been all of these like like all of these odds that he's defied his entire career of like, all right, it's going to take a little extra oomph for him to get a ball into a spot that the average quarterback with average arm strength is going to be able to do. In order for him to beat that defender, he's going to have it timed out right and have studied perfectly and know the guy's tendencies and get it
so
over the
what
top
we're
of them.
Suggesting is that in a career where he's had to be close to perfect for it to work,
yeah,
he has to be even more perfect now.
And he can't, because no one can.
Right.
And because it's so hard to do that, when that margin thins out just a little bit more, a lot more mistakes are made. Because here's the thing. Like, you can go back throughout the course of the season for sure, but even over the last four games where there's been eight interceptions, there's been 15 balls that could have been intercepted.
Right.
Even big plays that were made were this close.
Well, the Ray McLeod down the left sideline two games ago is a pickable ball.
There's just a handful of them every single game where even ones that turn out to be huge, great, big plays for the offense. And this is true of a lot of quarterbacks. Like, it's the NFL. It's a split-second league where it comes down to you either make the decision on time or you don't. And maybe that does come back to what you're talking about. Maybe it is a trust thing.
So
because if you don't trust it, that slows down that process as well, and then that leads to these mistakes being made. I don't know if it's that. Maybe it is.
But here's the other question for the offense. How do you make it so he doesn't have to be perfect? And how much would that take away from what you can do offensively? Because that might be the task. If you're not going to change quarterbacks, which it looks like they're not,
yeah,
how do you make it so he doesn't have to do that? And how bad does the offense become?
But that's so hard. Like,
I agree.
If you're now getting to the point where it's like, all right, we got to really scale things back because
it's
of
not a good offense.
Well, it's not acceptable to have that. If you have another option,
then go to the other guy.
Draft pick, then you have to do that.
I agree.
Like, in years past where it's been like, I don't know, Marcus Mariota's limited, certainly.
A lot of different discussions about who that other guy is,
the guy behind him, yeah, I can't do that. Last year, it's like, I don't know, Ritter, I mean, he's got arm talent. He just makes bad decisions. But who's behind him? It's Taylor Heinicke. Like, nobody really wants to see that. You want to see it because it's different. You don't really need to see it to know what it is. That was a first-round draft pick. Like, it's a different deal. And, again, like we said, I don't remember who we're talking about, but you sleep in the bed you made. Raheem acknowledged it last week, and he's right. They didn't want this kind of smoke if Kirk wasn't playing well. Don't draft a quarterback in the first round because you're asking for it. Everybody always wants to see the backup quarterback, especially when it's a first-round draft pick, and the starter's not playing very well. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an NFL no-huddle to kick off the noon hour. We'll get to some of the other big stories around the league. Week 15 kicks off tonight. The Rams are taking on the 49ers. That should be a pretty fun one. A lot of other headlines to get to as well. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.